Good morning. I think I just got elevated. I'm actually not a doctor. I have my master's in counseling. I'm not from the public health world, but I'm new to it and very excited to be here. Usually I'm in categories around youth or domestic violence, so this is a new audience, and I'm excited to hear some questions and comments that you might have about the presentation. So I've been doing domestic violence work for the last 17 years. I've done it in a variety of different settings. I've done it overseas in refugee camps. I've done it in court, counseling, hospitals, variety of different settings. And it's always a hard message to get across. People don't want to talk about domestic violence. They either feel it's very personal, or they feel it's something that they already understand. They don't need any help about it. It's their own relationship. You know, stay away. And particularly around teens, as teens are coming into their own, as they're learning how to be in relationships, they really don't want you interfering. They're going to figure this out. They know how it is. It's a very tricky world. So what I'm going to take you through today is just the steps that we've done to try and get messaging to teens around healthy dating skills, the prom, and most recently, dancing. And I will walk you through this. I have nothing to disclose. So how this all started is through domestic violence training that we did with hair salons. Cut It Out is a national program. We adapted that national program to Cambridge, renamed it Cut It Out Cambridge. Really thinking about how the salons are a place of really community, where people are coming together to talk, where people aren't just getting their hair done, they're actually staying after their appointments, talking to each other. It's much more of a social atmosphere. It's a place to informally get the message across. What we found when we talked to a lot of the stylists is that they are hearing primarily about the relationships that their customers are in, either because they're there to get their hair done for a big event, you know, a date, their wedding, whatever it might be, and information about the relationship comes out, or they're trying to get a date or impress their date or whatever it might be. So a lot of the conversation was around around dating, around relationships, what's healthy, what's unhealthy, and of course they weren't using those words. Those are the words that I was using. And so we went in there to try and talk to the stylists and really give them the tools to respond to what they were hearing about, because they were hearing about a lot of abuse. And not only were they hearing about it, they were seeing it. So some of the stylists that we talked to were talking about how they could not do either a treatment or a hairstyle for someone because of the injuries on the head, whether it was cigarette burns, open wounds, scars, those kinds of things, big chunks of hair having been ripped out, and they had to ask, you know, or say something, I can't do what you want to do because of these injuries. Or they saw things, you know, and what we know around domestic violence is that those that are perpetrating it know where to hurt and where to injure, so it's not visible every day when you're walking around. And so a lot of times it's on the torso where it's covered up by clothing, or it's on the scalp where the hair is covering it. So what these stylists were finding was a whole other section of domestic violence, and in a way to have that conversation. They, believe you me, they did not want to have that conversation, but they had to based on what they were doing and what they were being asked to do. So it was really incredible to go in there and talk to them. We trained 16 salons. Five of those salons participated in a YouTube video, a PSA that we put together. And the reason that I mentioned that is that filming took between 2 to 5 hours. So that was a lot of time for us to be talking and meeting with them, more than the usual half an hour is what they allotted me to do the trainings at the different salons. So a lot of time to talk with them to really understand what they were seeing. They were telling me stories of having to call the police, you know, on abusers that were coming in and disrupting what was going on in the salons. You know, people who wouldn't pay, their partners wouldn't pay for the haircut because the partner didn't like how it was styled. A lot of examples of domestic violence. And that was part of the challenge of doing this program, was that it is a for-profit environment. You don't get a lot of time with stylists because their time is money. And we weren't paying. So we were losing them money by coming in and talking about this, so we had to be quick. So having that time and having them be volunteering to do the video was really fantastic, because it gave us a whole chunk of time to talk to them about it. And their number one concern when we talked to them, not only how to respond to clients, and pretty much the biggest question I got was, do I have to call the police if I see something? Which in Massachusetts, there's no law that you have to call the police if an adult over the age of 18 is being abused. So, but the biggest concern that they had were teen girls. what they were seeing were teen girls coming in and basically being what I call under surveillance while they were getting their hair done. They were getting multiple texts from their partner, and we know teens don't use the word partner, but I'm going to use it just for clarification. Where are you? What are you doing? Who are you with? This kind of thing. And the phone is right in front of them. The stylist is behind them. They can see what's coming in and who it's coming in about. And so these teen girls were really under surveillance. Either the partners were, again, walking around outside waiting, why isn't this going faster, or I'm not going to pay for that haircut because I don't think you look good, or that's not what I asked for, those kinds of things. And then really the stylists were thinking, what can we do for these teen girls? They are the ones coming forward. And for those of us in the field, we know 1 in 3 teen girls are going to face teen dating violence. So I knew the numbers were high, and to have them bring it to me was really interesting because I thought, this is a real example of how the community is noticing this without even realizing the stats, without even realizing what's going on and what we know statistically. So the number one concern of stylists were teen girls. When are teen girls going to consistently go into the salon and get their hair done? Prom. So we know 86% of teen girls get their hair done for prom. So how can we put all of these things together? And this was how the program came together. So, Promtacular is what we decided to call it. And this is the poster, the registration poster that we had. So we had 50 girls registered, 50 girls attended, 50 girls received the $50 certificate, and what they got was a certificate to use at one of the salons that we have trained after they attended one of our 90-minute workshops. So they had to come to one of our workshops after the completion of that work. I mean, they had to stay the whole time. And I don't know how many of you work with teens. It's hard to get them in one place for 90 minutes. So we got them there for 90 minutes. When they completed it, they got this $50 certificate to use at one of our trained salons, or they could recruit a salon that they liked into our program. We would go train them to use it. So we tried to make it as agreeable as possible. This is only within the Cambridge area in Massachusetts. So it turns out only 58% of the girls used their certificate, which still confuses us. We're not sure why they didn't all use it. I never got any good responses from them, either from the survey or just when I would run into them around town asking why they didn't use it. Some of them forgot, even though there were many, many reminders from our end. So we don't have a good explanation for that. But the focus of Promtacular, what we really did was putting the 1 + 1 = 2 to these girls. These girls were so excited about prom. They were in that hysterical sort of hair, makeup, dress, got to look all, look a certain way, and not putting together some of the risks that could be involved with going to prom and that sort of hyper awareness of just being, this is the last hurrah, what could happen. And so really talking about the rumors, what movies have you seen? What's the influence of media on what you're doing? And the resistance was, there is no influence from media. And then, well, how did you pick how you're having your hair done? Oh, we went through magazines. And so we talked about, whose idea of beauty, so we really tried to break it down with them, talk about it, talk about, what they could be facing, what the evening could be like, and do you have a plan? Do you have a plan if one of your friends is in trouble? Do you have a plan if someone offers you a drink and you don't want to have a drink? Or do you have a ride home? Are you thinking more than the getting ready period, which seemed to be the most exciting part of prom for these girls, was getting ready and seeing their dates dressed up because none of them had seen them out of shorts and t-shirts and what have you. So from our survey, 58% of the girls responded to our survey. 90% said that they learned something new, which is very exciting for us. 97% that they would recommend Promtacular to their friends, also very exciting. And 70% of the girls asked to make the session longer. It was a fantastic experience in watching these girls talk about this, seeing light bulbs come on for them in a way that they haven't been talking. They've been talking about, what dress are you wearing? And nowadays you have a Facebook page for the school and everyone puts their dress up there to make sure no two girls are wearing the same dress, and then that has to get tailored because then people are just slamming each other's dresses. And so, there's a whole other world around prom, which I had no idea about until I got into this. But we had great conversations. The fact that they wanted to make them longer was incredible. We were very encouraged by that. So walking out of Promtacular, and high-fiving each other and thinking we've done this fantastic job and we've reached these 50 girls that are going to go forward to prom and have a good time and not a frightening time or an unhealthy time. Two of us volunteered to actually chaperone the prom, which I'm so glad we did, because what we found is that the type of dancing that was going on at the prom was something we had no idea about. And I feel so old. as it is, teens as a group have their own language, and they're, half the time I'm like, what are you saying? I don't understand. So we get to prom, and there is a type of dancing. At the time, we did not know. We were saying it was grinding plus. That was our way of describing it, because we didn't know what the word was. Turns out it's called daggering. And this is sort of the Wikipedia definition of daggering, which is the most, tame version. Daggering is a form of dance originating in the Caribbean, and that's important, and I'll let you know why I put that in there. And really, it's if you look at the images of dancing, and you go to number four, the one, it's really this back to front. It's a guy just backing up to the woman, and sort of this grinding. And it's very sexual. What we saw was really horrific in the fact that, in this picture, the guy has his hands on her hips. And what we were seeing was that meant that you could lift the skirt up as you were dancing. So half the time the skirt was around the waist. It was this constant switch of partners with the girl just staying in one place, and then another guy would come behind, and then another guy would come behind. And it was, for us, it was traumatizing. But for them, they loved it. And it really, it can go with a song that has lyrical instructions, but really it's a type of song that these girls were getting into. We knew what Promtacular 2011 was going to focus on as soon as we finished chaperoning this. And it really, for these girls, it is very old-fashioned that this kind of messaging is coming across. And it does feel very much like the Footloose movies and the you can't dance and this is going to, and we don't want it to come across that way. This is a different type of dancing than we've seen in the past. And so we really wanted to highlight that what was happening. We just spent this 90 minutes with these girls talking about self-respect, healthy boundaries, dating skills, all of these things. And then what we saw just went counter to everything. So how can we add to our programming to include that, to make it more realistic for these girls so that they can put into play what we're talking about instead of just talking about it? So these are the tamest pictures that I could find to give an idea of what daggering is like. And again, if you think about it, it what we saw was sort of this times 10. It was these guys are relatively uninterested in what we're doing. I mean, I didn't see anyone on the phone like this picture, but it gives you, it's also that sense, another thing that we use these photos for is that the way that the girls were dressing up for prom and the way that the guys were also so opposite. And so that was part of what was going on there. But so think of this times 10. If you Google daggering or especially YouTube daggering, it's a whole nother thing. And that was more like what we were seeing. So how we found out it was daggering is that right after the prom, this article came out in the Boston Globe on May 30th. And this woman, Shanasia Bennett, was someone in Boston who brought this daggering movement to her principal and said that we do not want this to ruin our prom. We want to do something about this, and actually had her principal watch the daggering videos on YouTube, which is enough to scare anyone. And so she had a meeting with the whole school saying this is unacceptable, anyone will be kicked out of school if this happens. And so Shanasia was fantastic in that and really pioneered that and was very, very vocal about it. randomly, it turns out that she is the student of our coworker's mother. So we found her personally. And we really wanted to talk to her about how did she get this message? How was she received as a senior in high school with this messaging? Because we thought, these girls are doing this, they must like this, this must be what they want to be doing. How was this message received? And she was very sweet, sweet girl, and was so conflicted on that. Didn't want to seem uncool, but at the same time really didn't like this dancing, didn't want to do this dancing. And more than anything else is that she hated the way guys talked about this, that the guys were telling her that they feel like kings on the dance floor, that they're in control of the dance floor, that they have all the moves, that they're, you know, and that was something that really rubbed her the wrong way, and that stood out more than anything else as to why she wanted to end this. So we thought, okay, that's good. Now we have a way of coming at it that makes sense. How are we going to talk to girls about this? And perhaps we should be involved in dance classes, because if girls don't know any other way to dance, perhaps, you know, teaching them another way to dance would change that. So instead of reinventing the wheel, there turned out to be already dance classes at some of the youth centers in Cambridge that were taught by MIT students. And one in particular that we focused on was a girls' class for high school girls, and it was very specific choreography. So it was current music with the lyrics altered, what she called the radio format. So the language was taken out and some of the horrible lyrics were taken out, but it's basically the same thing. And what she did was refocus the dance and show how you can dance to these songs without it being so suggestive, without it being so sexual, in a way that was different than these girls knew. Because what they know is what they're watching in music videos. What they know is what they're watching their friends do. And what they're doing is practicing along with the videos and all the variety of different video games and things that are out there. So a lot of it was also trained as a fitness class, because we wanted it to be, they wanted it to be something where it was fun and they didn't realize they were getting a workout at the same time. So what happened was that the girls decided that they wanted boys to be included, because they were used to dancing with other girls and that was never a problem. But when boys got into the picture, that's when things became tricky. So for the winter classes, they asked the boys to be included. No one showed up. No girls showed up. No boys showed up. Nothing happened for over, I think she said, five weeks, which was disturbing, but not surprising with this age group. I think a lot of them think that they're older and more mature than they are. They got embarrassed. You know, they were uncomfortable. They weren't sure how it was going to be. Variety of different things. And when I went back to the girls' class, the girls were back in it. So what we did as the Promptacular staff was to infuse our Promptacular messaging in with these dance classes of how to do this in a self-respectful way, how to dance in a way that's comfortable to you. It doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. Here are all these new steps that you've learned, and let's use them at the prom. So Promptacular 2011. We had 50 girls registered, only 38 attended, 38 received the $50 certificate, and 28 girls used their certificate. The only explanation that we have for the difference as to why Promptacular, the first one, was 50 girls registered and 50 girls attended versus this is 50 girls registered is we made registration harder the first time than we did the second time. So the second time registration, I stood in the hallways of the high school and I said, do you want to come sign up for a day? And they promptly forgot, even with all my reminders. Whereas Promptacular, the first one, they had to call me to register. They had to take an extra step to register. And we think that's why we had more the first time than the second time. We made it too easy the second time, and they promptly forgot, and they were just walking through the hallway, and they were like, hey, yeah, why not? I'll come. And then they never actually showed up. So that is our guess. We don't have a real reason why. And we had four newly recruited salons, which we were thrilled about. There's something about adults being more willing to help teens around this issue, around dating violence, than they are to help other adults. It's a good thing in the fact that it's great that so many people care about teens. It's a bad thing when so many adult women also need the support and the help around this. So the focus of Promptacular 2011 was daggering. And it was highly entertaining to see their reaction when we first brought up daggering. It was something that they didn't know that, as one girl said, they didn't know a white adult would know about. Then, so they were shocked. They were shocked that we brought it up. They felt it was a hidden thing. How did we find out about it? They thought it was something that very particular people do, and so why, how could I possibly know about it? It's very similar to the work that I do with them around Facebook and sexting, you know, sending naked pictures. They can't figure out how I saw their Facebook page. You know, how could an adult see my Facebook page? It's sort of this real disconnect between what they're doing in their world and the rest of the world. And it's part of me is just like, you gotta stop with these pictures. And part of, they were saying to me, as an adult, I know better than to look at their pages. So it's a continuous conversation with teens. If anyone is a parent of them and or works with them, it's a constant conversation about this privacy and kids and so forth. So the first pushback was, how on earth did I know about this? And then the second was that this is a cultural dance. And how dare I stop them from dancing this way when this started in the Caribbean? It's associated with the Jamaican culture. I can't stop that. And this goes back to the footloose thing of I am holding people down from doing what is part of their culture. And so that was a very interesting argument because it, once you got past that first layer, they had nothing else to say. And two, it's not really that way. You know, in a lot of places it's been banned. There are a lot of injuries from this. It's a very interesting conversation, but that I won't go into right now. But it's we had a very interesting conversation. So there was pushback, but that at the same time, they knew that this was very sexual, that this was something that they were uncomfortable with but felt they had to do, either through peer pressure, either because this was the only way they knew how to dance, or the combination of the two. Okay, so what we found in our conversation is that it basically went through these levels, that this was what's happening in videos, that men expect it, so therefore I have to do it. And then to the, it's the only thing I know, I learned this very young, it's the only thing I know, to boys are gross, you're not supposed to do it, but you get caught up in it, to if you dance a little bit like this, then it gets really aggressive and scary. And that's what we wanted to get to. That's sort of the nugget of what we wanted to girls to think about, is that it does get scary, it does get aggressive, and what do you do when that happens? How can you collectively, you know, as girls going through this program, help each other, but also think about what you're doing, what it looks like from the outside. You know, so many, they're in their world, they don't realize how many people are watching them, they're not realizing what they look like when they're doing this, what it's suggesting to other people. And when we talked about, in the future, we hope to work with boys in prom too, because one of the big messages that boys get is that if you haven't had sex by the time high school ends, you know, prom is your last opportunity. You know, and if you add that messaging with what's going on here, things can get very sticky and very complicated, and we wanted to avoid that. So what happened this prom, because we, of course, had to volunteer again to be chaperones, is what we made sure was that there were no songs that were around that either gave those explicit lyrics of how to dagger or that encouraged daggering, that we really wanted them to be group dancing, to be this big celebration, to make this fun for everyone. And then there was immediate awareness that daggering would not be accepted. One, because we were standing there and they could correlate what was just said during these sessions, these workshops with them, and me standing there watching them. You know, that was a very big reminder. Two, we broke it up very quickly, whereas the year before we were so stunned we were not as fast in breaking it up. And three, we identified teens who were helping us, teens that were on the dance floor dancing themselves, either breaking it up by dancing between people, or some of the girls were actually pulling down the skirts of the girls that were, the skirts that were going up. So there were a variety of different ways that they were helping, which was fantastic for us, sort of inside as well as, you know. And I think, unfortunately, what we're going to see more is that so many of these of this dancing has caused problems at the schools. And not only do we not have the correct name for it, you know, dirty dancing takes us to that romantic movie that so many people love. And again, it's sort of let's overcome the powers that are saying we're old fashioned, or, you know, that we are somehow repressing someone by not being able to dance the way that we want to dance. And then a lot of use grinding. And grinding, while I'm not a fan of grinding, grinding is a more acceptable form of dance. Daggering is a whole nother level. And so we really need to be more clear about what kind of language we're using, and really talking to kids about what this looks like and what this means for them. If I see you dancing this way, this is what I think. Is that the message you want to portray? Because that's a conversation you need to have with teens over and over again, not only just about dancing, but, you know, Facebook and technology and all those different things. Okay, thank you. Oh, I'm going the wrong way.